And we had a walk up the hill. That was quite nice.
Well, good to see you again. Those of you who are here. Well, I'd like to do, we have a couple of hours together, and I'll do a mixture of telling a few stories. You see, there are some stories coming, and giving some time for questions, and maybe say some more, and give some time for questions, and we just take it as it comes, more or less. It's not very formal. So, let me share a few good stories, and I'm not sure that these stories actually answer the questions that I have asked this morning, in the sense of what should the church be doing. I'm actually not sure that the church, there is one thing that the church should be doing, because we are no longer living in a uniform culture where most people think the same. We are actually moving into a time that is very fragmented. That means that we have all sorts of people around us. We have people with different ethnic backgrounds, which is very obvious. And sometimes we have different, come with different values. And I mean, many of the people are coming into this country from Africa. The fact that there is something spiritual that you worship is obvious. I mean, either you worship God, or you worship demons, or you worship something, but there is something spiritual there, and there's not a most people don't question it who are Africans. That's my experience. Whereas in the West, many of us live our lives without any reference to any supernatural. And why is it like that? I mean, but now cultures are mixed and people are coming in, and we are people who are so-called postmodern people that we talk about a lot, but still large segments of our populations are still modern, if you use those around, maybe I can explain that later. And there are all sorts of people around us, and therefore to say that the church has one method that will sort of, if everybody do this, then it'll work. And maybe we have had too much of that in the past, in that where we have said, let's all do seminars on Revelation, let's all do archaeology to make interest, let's all do health issues, and then we sort of this program come up, and we say, if we all do this, then it'll be fine. I doubt that. No, and it's much more organic, that much more, you have to think more about the individuals that we actually are dealing with. I'll come back to that. But let me show you, these are pictures of young people who have been baptized in Denmark lately. Just some of them. And it is something really nice and beautiful that we have baptized more young people in Denmark the last couple of years than we can remember for the last 20 or 30 years. And that's of course not a story about an individual, but a story of something that has happened in the church. And somebody, we actually talked about it as we were walking and coming in here. Why did this happen? I think it's, if I can reflect on that for a minute, because I think it is significant. The church in the, let me tell you a little bit about the church in Scandinavia before I go into the, to answer that question. And of course, so this may be relevant for some of you and for others not. In Denmark, the church grew all the way from it started in the 1880s up till 1962. That was the top membership. And from that time, it has gone down. And it's actually, it's not like this. It's just up and then down. So somebody, if you ask them, what happened in 1962? Well, most people got television. Some will say that's the answer. I'm not sure that's the answer. But then, and with a little exception in 1989, where we had a big campaign in Copenhagen, and the sort of whole area was vacuum cleaned for potential Adventists, and they were all baptized that year. I'm sorry, I'm a bit cynical about it, because it was a bit like that, right? Sorry. And after that, it has been the same. But the two last years, we have had growth in the church in Denmark. And that is not insignificant. And a part of it is that so many young people, both from the church and from outside the church, are coming in. And young people are spiritual. They are more spiritual than their parents. Young people are spiritual, but they don't want to be put in a box. And they don't want to go just into a system and say, this is the system where I can put all my thoughts, and that's how it is. But to be spiritual for them is not to join an organization. It's something bigger. So that's a challenge for the church, which is an organization. But if I can try to give some factors in why I think so many young people come in. Of course, it is a spiritual, personal thing to give your life to Jesus Christ, and that is the explanation, that the Holy Spirit was doing a work in their lives, and they were actually convinced that they wanted to be followers of Jesus Christ. And that's beautiful. But then there are always also certain circumstances around that we can encourage or discourage that has happening. So, having said the most important factor, which is what God is doing in somebody's life, let me say something about the external things that we might be able to influence. First of all, I think the church in Denmark made a huge statement in saying to young people that they were welcome in one particular way, and that is, some of you have probably heard about the rumors and maybe some comments about the Kaffe Church in Copenhagen. Anybody heard about the Kaffe Church? Yeah. And which is what's a very new type of church plant, starting church in a very different concept. And it's not about coffee, it's about a cafe. That means you sit around tables, and the setting of the church is very different from here. But basically they sing, and they read the Bible, and they preach the word. But it's a different setting. And there has been a struggle in the church in Denmark, and there's so been many people have had opinions about what the young people were doing in this Catholic church. And it became almost inflammated, can you say that word? You know, the whole discussion became sort of nasty sometimes. And I think young people were watching the church at a distance and say, what are these people who are in the 40s, 50s and 60s? What are they talking about? Who are they? Do I want to join them? Is there room for me here? And the answer really for that, hearing that discussion, was no. But in 2000 and, let's see, 9, we had a union session. No, 10. At a union session, and the Kaffe Church in Copenhagen and a similar project also close by Copenhagen were both voted in as regular churches in our union. And that was a statement to the whole church, I mean, with a 90% majority saying, this church, the Adventist church in Denmark, we can accept that people do things differently, and that we actually can, that we can embrace things that are different from what the church used to be. That was a very significant statement, because that was really the time where the baptisms of young people started also to happen. Then I don't think that's the only factor, but the signals the church is sending to young people are very important when it comes to leadership and what we are saying about and how inclusive we are. Then we have tried to put a lot of energy into work for young people in our church, in that we have strengthened the youth department and have tried to have relevant events, particularly for young people. And we have tried to follow every young person we are in contact with responsibility, in the sense that we care for them. So we have started a system, and I, you know, this can sound, maybe it sounds like communist Soviet, I don't know. It's not meant like that at all. But we actually, every young person can register, and it's voluntarily, but they do, they give us their, and we follow the young people when they move around, and we say, we, in our workers' meetings, we actually go through the names of all the young people in the Danish Union together. And we spend hours. Every year in May, we spend hours together and just saying, where is this person? Who is responsible for that? Is that person moving from one university to the other, or from one school to the other, or from one city to the other? Who is picking up that contact? And it comes down to each pastor's name, and say, this is your job, to see to it that this young person actually is contacted, and so on. And you know, but that's a caring thing for us. It's not we are not only there to have more members. The church is much more than membership. It's about a fellowship and about a spiritual life together that we have. But we have to keep our people. I think that has been, and then we have had a very good youth leader, Thomas Rasmussen, who cares for young people and is very good at speaking to young people about faith. So it didn't happen as an accident, I don't think that, but it's certainly the Spirit of God helping us in doing these things. And this is also the secret of the church. There has to be a combination of the spiritual and what God is doing, with some very careful effort on our side, thinking, how do we actually care for each other? Love doesn't happen by accident. It happens in a plan. You're going to care for your members in this church. You have to think about who cares for who. And if you don't think about that, it's not going to happen, unless you're a very small group. Yeah, well, this is Malin, you see to the right. All pictures are of her. She was a person who comes not from an Adventist Christian home, but she went to our school at Veilefjord and was baptized in her third year there. And you see her graduating to the right. And I heard her testimony. Actually, when she came to our school, she said, I like it here. It's good, you know, then you can have your horse here, and it's a good free, good activities, and they have a nice sports hall, and it's a nice school, you know. So see, I like it here. It's a beautiful place. But I don't want to hear anything about this religion shit. You know? That's what she said. So, you know. So, but she was there, she had her friends. Then they had speakers coming in for inspirational weeks and talking about her faith, and you know, her curiosity grew. And actually a turning point in her life was reading The Desire of Ages in a new version that is called The Messiah. And our youth leader was so smart, so he said, would you like to read this book? I'd like to hear what you think about it. And it was not published yet, so they said, can you read it and say what you think about it? So she read it, just because she was his friend. And then she actually, I read her testimony in the Danish news newspaper. She's saying, that's the best book I've read in my life. And for the first time, I understand what Jesus is all about. A wonderful testimony. And she met Jesus in that, and understood who he is and what he wants from our lives. And she was baptized, as you see there. And we haven't seen many young people from a non-Christian background coming to faith at our college over the last many years. But over the last 2 or 3 years, it's happening more and more, because young people are more spiritual than their parents. And you can read any research. If you read research on what is happening in the Western world, not by Adventists or Christians, but if you go to the, I mean, some universities, some other research organizations, they have the research into what is the development of society and study what's going to happen in the near future. They all say the same thing. We are living in a spiritual time, and it's ironic that we as a church, we struggle to survive in a time where people are more spiritual than they were before. But the thing is, what the issues are for them is not the issues that we are talking about. We have an agenda that comes out of the 1800s, but people are asking different questions in our time about what spirituality is all about. And that is a challenge for us. And can we as a church actually meet the spiritual search of the people who are living in our society and are going all other places than to the church to find answers because they don't understand what we are doing? So that's a very beautiful story, but it's not a single story. It is a group of people, young people coming into the church. Then of course, hang on. Yeah, I just mentioned this because also in Denmark, immigrant Christians are a very important factor in the way the church is developing, and we are happy about it. And they come from all over the place, Asia. You can see people from the Philippines, South Americans, Africans, and we just planted 2.5 years ago a new English-speaking church in Copenhagen. You don't need the details of that. Then this is the lady I spoke about this morning, Birgit, who just came off the street more or less because she'd been reading literature and was interested in becoming an Adventist. I won't spend more time on that. She was baptized in this church there. Let me tell you about a very different ministry that is just starting, and that's a vision we have had, some of us together, for a time. This is a second-hand shop, and it says you read Adventist Kirkens. Kirk is also a Scottish word, isn't it? Yeah, church, Kirk, and Happy Hand is the name of the shop, and then Pass It On is the word underneath. That's sort of the motto for the shop, Pass It On, because you take something second hand and you give and you reuse the resources of this world, earth. And I was in there painting, one evening. I just wanted to be a part of it, and I was sort of pushing some people trying to start this, and not pushing but joining, I should say. And I saw something interesting, and this is also maybe just an observation, but it says something about young people and spirituality. As you see, the people who are painting here are quite young people. I think it's more on the next picture. Now let's hang on there for a minute. The young people who were in there setting this shop ready for his ministry, I can tell you a little bit more about what that is later. They were young people that did not really come to church that often. And some people, when you ask them to do something for Jesus, and do something for their neighbor or for somebody else, they would love to do it. But in church, when we are talking about what we should be doing, they are not so interested. And often, men are in that category. There are so many men who they are not verbal, they don't like to talk so much, but if you ask them to do something, they will help you. And those of you ladies, maybe you who sit here with your husbands, you have men who are verbal, I don't know, but many men will never say to their wives, I love you, but they will get up early on Sunday morning and clean the kitchen, or go out and paint the garage door, or fix the sewage or whatever, you know. And say, and what are they doing? They are saying, I'm caring for my family, I'm caring for you, I love you. That's why they do it. But they don't use words. And these, some of these young people, they are not churchgoers, but when it came to doing something practical, they were there. And that's interesting from a spiritual point of view. So they started this shop. And the purpose of this shop, I mean, this is really a great story so far. It's been going on for almost a year now. It's a second-hand shop. The point of it is to make money to pour into the community, paying for free therapy for families with some are struggling financially and have conflicts, helping children and parents, because they are in a very challenged area of Copenhagen where all the shootings were a couple of years ago. You probably read about that and saw that on the news. So they're right there, and it's just, you know, right across the road, and one block down there was people were shot there, and but this is a main road, and it's pretty safe just there. But so they do that. They are doing free lesson, homework help for kids who don't have support at home. Many Muslim families who don't really speak the language are there, and they hand out food to homeless people every week, and they have seminars on faith and relationships in the shop, because they can clear out some of the places and make a little cafe area where they can actually do teaching. The lady you see, let's see where I put my, the lady you see on the top left there, Berit, she is really the star of the whole show, and she's a wonderful person who has invested I don't know how much in this. So they gave me the honor of cutting the ribbon when they opened, because I've been quite involved in starting the thing. That's actually one of my daughters there, who's been very active in that. Music, and one of our pastors in Copenhagen, Bobby Bovell, we actually picked him from England. Good speaker. He's the pastor of the Catholic Church. He's a good singer too, and a rapper, and he writes these marvelous texts in his rap songs. He is the pastor there for one afternoon every week. This was a seminar about faith. Can we believe in God? And one of the ladies, the people come in here and they like the shop so much. It's really something else. It's not an ordinary second-hand shop. I think it's quite special, in the sense that it has a fantastic atmosphere, and people come in and say, "I like it so much here. Can I do voluntary work here in this shop?" And they have so many non-Adventists coming in to do voluntary work. They had to say no. And one of the ladies who was there from the very start, it was just 14 days after she was there for the first time, she started coming to church, has been coming to church ever since, because she says, "Finally I find some people I can connect to." But she didn't know the Adventist doctrines. She just said that, "I like what you are doing and the values that this church has, and I want to join you in doing this ministry." Okay, so back to England. You probably know more about this than I don't know if you do that. Have you heard about Mercy Church? Yeah. Please?
They just started doing it in Dundee.
In Dundee? Yeah, and I stand there in the Mercy, there you go. I went to Reading a couple of weeks ago, and they were announcing that they were starting Mercy Church in a church plant near Reading too. What is that all about? Well, it's a different way of being together than we are here now, but it's very real, and it's about parents and children doing something spiritual together. And of course, they eat, have fun, They sing and they tell stories from the Bible. Then they are creative and can do some art things on the child's level and that sort of thing. And in the process of being together and just having life together, having fun together, the message of Jesus comes through, and they talk about it. And there's some time for adults to talk, and there's some time to be together, like we see in these pictures. New ways of meeting people. Then this is a picture from the cafeteria. I think that's my last one, actually. Yep. So far. This lady here is a physiotherapist, and she was in the group that started the cafe church. This is a picture from the cafe church some years back, and this lady here, she's an evangelist. She also has a degree in therapy, and she is a prayer warrior. And I am not a member of this church, and I just come there occasionally, and I preach there occasionally. But I have met several people in this church that has got faith in God because she has taught them to pray. And she has prayed for them, and she has taught them how to pray. And it's a different type of evangelism that we usually talk about, because we usually have an approach to evangelism that we should teach people what they should think about certain topics. Right? But her approach is that people have to learn to know that there is a God before it's interesting to know the teachings of the Bible. And it's not a discussion on whether we are keeping Sunday or Saturday. It's not a discussion of what we are eating or not eating. It's a discussion, is life spiritual? Is God there? And can I live in connection with a higher personality in the universe? I mean, is God real, and does it affect my life? And I heard some wonderful stories about how people's prayers have been answered, and how Susanna, as her name is, has done a ministry to these people. And when you look at the history of this church, basically, it picked up a lot of young people to start with who would not come to an ordinary church, but were young people from Adventist homes. Then on top of that, they reached out to a lot of New Age people. And when I say New Age, you are with me, in the sense that they have this more spiritualistic, undefined approach to spirituality, and they actually saved, and I mean saved, people out of occultism. Is that the right word? Where people were plagued by actually the possessions and terrible stuff because they have been involved in spiritualistic stuff that was not healthy. So then quite a few of the people who became members there were people who had experimented with that sort of thing. Yeah. These are what I'm saying now. It's really some bits and pieces, and there's not a uniform message in what I've been saying so far. I can see that, and maybe there shouldn't be, because as I said to start with, our answers are not to find the one, you know, way that fits. Our answers are rather to find people, and to deal with the people that we know. I can say a little bit more about that, but maybe I should take a break and then just... do you have any questions out of this? I have... If I go back... No, I'm using that one. If I go back... Cafe Church, Messy Church, Happy Hand, few testimonies, international work, young people, that's what I've talked about. Please.
This book you mentioned, the new version of Desire of Ages of Messiah.
Yeah.
Is that a Danish venture, or is it?
No, that's an international venture.
So there's an English book.
It's absolutely. It's an Australian who has done the manuscript, and it will it's available in English, and we are translating it into Danish. But it makes it's a shorter version, and it sort of writes it's the same paragraphs, but it has a modern language to it, because Ellen White wrote this 100 years ago, 110 or something, and the language is from that time, so it's trying to put the same message into a new language. Yeah.
Yes, I was interested in the young lady who was really converted by reading The Desire of Ages.
Yes.
Now, do you think we should be promoting that book rather than The Great Controversy?
I think so. You should not give... The Great Controversy is a book that explains Adventist history and how we have arrived at what we where we are or have been. But there are fewer and fewer people in our environment that really understand what that is all about. Because the discussions about doctrines, you know, that are specific between groups of Christians... that is not the discussion that people really are involved in society today. And when Adventism was new in America 150 years ago, everybody was a Christian, but they were Quakers and they were Baptists and they were Catholics and they were whatever, and they discussed between them what is the right Christianity. And that is why we had this emphasis on these certain doctrines, because that it was our explanation. But today we live in a society where that whole discussion is out of the... It's not there. It's not there at all. So talking to people about religion is not about talking about the right doctrines. We have to go down to the very basic ideas of Christianity and say, is there really a God? Does it work to pray? You know, because that was common ground for our early Adventists with all their Christian friends. They agreed on all these things, but they were disagreed on, you know, should we worship on this or that day. But today we have to start with people who are pagans, almost. So, yes, to understand who Jesus is the very central idea of the whole thing. And some of the issues, and I mean also the... I am a bit embarrassed about some of the things that is in the Great Controversy, how the language that is used about other Christian people, and of course that reflects also another time, and we don't speak to each other in the same style. But even in England and in Denmark or wherever, if you go back to the same time, you will find the same language as you find in these books, and it was normal, but it's not normal today. Please.
I was looking at what you had on the screen there. When did I notice the numbers of people? There were a lot of people involved in these things. When do these things actually take place? Evenings, Sabbath, Sundays, because people are working. When do you do this kind of thing?
You're thinking of the second-hand shop, maybe?
Yeah, or? And the other, the school, the kids, and the other... Whatever you had on the screen. When do they take place?
Okay. See, this is an ordinary church thing on Sabbath, because that's just the International Church in Copenhagen. This shop is open in the afternoon, 4 days a week.
So the public just come in.
The public, and it's the wonderful thing about it, and that was strategically a good decision, and that was we have put it on one of the busiest streets in Copenhagen. It costs a lot of money, but it pays back. The first 3 months in business, they had made a profit of £10,000, which they will pour back into... Pardon?
Is this in one of the pedestrian go-getters?
No, it's actually... Yeah, it's only for buses, and there's buses go through, and then they're quite wide pedestrian areas. So there are thousands of people passing there, and we couldn't dream of it being so successful. But if it had been just around the corner, it probably wouldn't have had the same effect. But the fact that it is open in hours where people are working, means that we have volunteers, and they are students, and they are pensioners, and people who work like nurses or, you know, who have shifts and can come in and do. But we have some really healthy, good, strong pensioners who are carrying a major load. Yeah, we do. Which is a wonderful thing. And it's just amazing the number of people who have been in there and the conversations that they have with people. And when you come in there, they have a cafe in the furthest into the shop, and we have statements on the wall. Some are from Jesus, some are from other wise men in history, and from the Bible. And it's sort of a spiritual atmosphere in the whole shop, and people sort of pick up on it immediately and start talking to the people there. So that's right. Not anybody could do that. And this is a Sabbath activity, and that's a Sabbath activity. Please.
I'm not sure what everyone else is thinking this afternoon, but it strikes me that the message you're giving here is to find out that we should be looking at where God is leading us and trying new, being open to new ideas. By way of encouragement for what's happening in this church now, one or two of our church members started something that's called Hearts and Hands.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know where this is going. I'm not involved in it at all. But I can see God's hand in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could probably develop into something like that, that shop. And so I think what I can see you're telling us is that we need to be open to new things.
Yes.
And to be ready to step out in faith. I'm using old-fashioned language now, aren't I?
Oh, that's fine.
It's
true.
That's just showing my age. But and when something good comes, we should be ready to support it and put our energies into it.
Yes.
So we have got something here. We started something that is a little different, and I think it could go tremendously.
I think, could I add something to what you are saying? Or was there another question first? I wish I had even more experience to share with you. But from the point of my life, I have been able to see many things happening since I have been in leadership, sort of thing, what's happening around. If I can tell you another conviction of mine, we have to move away from programs to people. And what I mean by that is this. And I think I have experience to back it up. We had the same experience as we had in Denmark a couple of years ago with the growth. We had the same experience in Sweden when I was there earlier. And actually in Sweden the curve was a bit different. There was growth up to 73 or something. And then the curve started to drop again. And we had growth there for several years. And let me make a very short version of it, because there are many factors in it. But we, as leaders, union leaders, and the guy who was responsible for evangelism, I'm not saying that, you know, I've done so much. But what I have tried to do is to focus on the mission of the church always. Thank you. And we traveled to all the church boards, not once, but many times. And we started to ask the leaders in each church, say, not what are your programs, but we say, who are your people? And we say, what 3, 5, 7, whatever One, people do you in this church have contact with who are on his or her way towards faith? And we said, write those names down and give them to us. So we were there, you know, right? We write them down. And we came back and we said, these are the names of the people you gave to us. What is happening with them? What are you doing for them? And we said to the church, don't plan your ministry, your activities as a program for the city, who is nobody. Plan your program for those three people who are on their way to faith in this church. Somebody's husband or wife in the church that might be interested. One friend here, and they are not big numbers. Maybe there are only those three people or four people. But don't think about the whole city and what people could be interested in. Think about their specific needs and how they can be led to Jesus Christ. I think that's probably, that I think that was very significant, even if it was so simple. And we kept on going back to these pastors and to these churches and saying, what's happening? And what was the result of that was that suddenly there was a focus on people and their spiritual walk and their way to faith. And in 2005, together with the pastors, we started something that I would never have thought of doing. And it really came to me. I think that God inspired me on this one. I'm sorry, I don't like to talk about it this way because I'm not so significant in this. But I was at the general conference and in 2005, and there was all these big international campaigns. And I thought, what are we doing? And God, I was on my knees asking God, what are we doing? What should we be doing in Sweden? And I came home with this idea. I shared it with the office. It was refined. We shared it with all the pastors. It was refined. And we actually set out to say we will baptize 100 people in 500 days. And if we do that, our church will grow. And I don't really believe in that sort of thing, but it came out of a systematic teaching and a long ministry of visitation, and it happened. And the church grew for the first time in many, many years, and it continued to grow afterwards because the churches was taught to focus on people. And if you sit down in a circle here in Crieff and say, who are the 2, 4, 8 people that we know that probably would, who are, or at least who are interested in coming to faith, how can we serve these people? How can we help those people? Don't think about anybody else. And then you can make, if you call it programs, just for those people. That's what they need. But you can invite others, but it's for them. And I think it's a different thinking to think the church is about people, it's not about programs. And the church is not an organization, first of all. It is the people of God, and it's His people. We are not after having more people sitting in church on Saturday mornings. That is not our goal. Our goal is to make people following Jesus Christ. And to sit in church on Sabbath morning is hopefully something that helps people to follow Jesus Christ. And to be a member of the Adventist Church is a byproduct of following Jesus Christ. And it's not the most important thing. The most important thing is to follow Jesus Christ. And if you then want to be an Adventist, then we are really happy about that. I mean, that's a part of our fellowship. But do you see what I mean? And we have to get our priorities right. And we are not building a human organization with buildings and institutions. We are building the kingdom of God. And people are what makes up the kingdom of God. Sorry. Maybe that was too much. But this is, and you know, so our ministry is not about growing this church to more numbers. Our ministry is to help individuals who actually have names to find Jesus Christ and to find meaning in their lives and find a spiritual path through their life. That's what we are doing. The others are just sort of added, you know, factors. I won't let you wait too long, I'm sorry. But
no problem. Yeah. Since I put my hand up, you've answered the question that I was going to ask, because it was just a few minutes before I put my hand up, because I think there's this slight dilemma, and before this the last few minutes, you sort of gave me the impression that, yes, we are looking to help the community, but we're also looking for church growth. But now you've changed the emphasis in your last few minutes, which I'm very happy to hear. But in this church alone, Stephen just mentioned one outreach that we have, which is Hearts and Hands. Mm-hmm. But as individuals, there's a lot going on. We have people here who work for the Women's Voluntary Service, the WRVS.
Yes.
There are some that work in a local youth club called Logos, which is an interdenominational club where young people can just drop in. There are the street pastors. We have people who are street pastors. Mm-hmm. We have people who have a relationship with an organization called Shelter in Perth. There is a lot going on. We're not seeing church growth, but, you know, your last few comments, I think, has given us encouragement to think that, yes, we are doing what we can at the moment. We could do more, but we are doing what we can at the moment. With no ulterior motive, but that we are meeting the needs of the community.
Great. That's really great. Thank you.
Just one very basic question about the second-hand shop.
Yes?
I take it that you are selling all sorts of things. You sell...
Basically, it's clothing and shoes and maybe some magazines and, you know, things that, all sorts of things that people are giving.
Because I was going to say, do people bring things in for you to sell, and do they donate them for you to sell, or do you buy? Because I've run many, many charity shops here where people donate stuff, and I sold them for funding for overseas projects.
Yes.
But I'm now involved with a shop in Romania itself, which is a second-hand shop, and they have to buy in the goods to sell. I was just wondering whether your shop bought in things to sell, or whether they had things donated. And
everything is donated.
Everything's donated.
Yeah. And it's incredible what people give to the shop, really. Nice, almost new things that they have paid really dearly for, and it's coming in, and it has a good value.
There's thousands.
Yeah.
I think there's another thing we could add to what Moira listed just now. This morning, while we were cleaning our drive, clearing the snow away, the neighbour next door, who's elderly and I think has Alzheimer's, he was attempting to clear his driveway for visitors coming.
Yeah.
And half a dozen of us went round and did it for him, which of course he was very pleased.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that was just an instant thing that we did in helping our neighbour.
Mm. Good. Yeah. Please.
I think somebody put to me, when we say that we live in an age that has to change, what changes do you imagine in the church? Is this a change of worship style? Is it a change of teaching? Is it a change of music? Where do you see the changes coming? I think we agree that we're in a post-Christian age in our country.
No.
It's also very interesting that one of the division men said, it is very hard, or almost impossible, to do a church plant in a town of under 20,000. Our town is 6,000.
Mm.
And I ran, when I was minister here, 7 campaigns over years. This is 17, 20 years ago. People came, but very few actually joined.
Mm.
Some still come. They've not joined the church, but they're worshipping with us, and we're glad for that.
Yeah.
So where do you see changes? I think people are rather interested. Where is this change?
Yeah. There's a whole row of things. I think it's both when it comes to practical, how we do church. It is about what are we talking about. And it's about also degrees of commitment. And maybe I should show my next presentation, because let me do that, because then I get more systematic about it.
While you're doing that,
yeah.
It's interesting that Ruth Barrow, one of our members here, had the vision of trying to get people to think about Jesus, and we did a program called the Jaywalkers, which was for us heavily advertised in the papers, in handbills, in posters, in letters and everything else, which had 9 tableaus around the grounds and the church. And people, as they came in, they were given a guide, and they said, now come and see this one, that was a woman at the well, come and see John in prison, come and see who were the other
things?
Drama, beautifully done. And we had traditional costume. One of the very wealthy people here, who is a Christian, gave us all the Roman armour, and so it was very, very authentic. I think you could have put it on anywhere. And we would hope that people might say, oh yes, let's go, the games for children. But I think under 20 people actually turned up. So here was something not in church, here was something that we were trying to do on a very entertaining level. And I think that shows something of the difficulty of maybe breaking through or getting people in to think about church.
Yeah, I agree. And are you asking a question? Yeah?
Well, I just thought I could have something to say. Yeah, I remember seeing that, and it was a shame for the church, because it was really good and it was really well organised. Not a lot of people came. And I think with what you're saying in your other presentation, with people, especially nowadays, I think the association with the idea of a church and all its... the preconceptions of it that they may have, especially in society, would be a deterrent for people to come. Whereas having things that are quite different, and it's practically, like, you're doing something practical to show involvement in the community and caring for others. And through that, people learn what it means to be spiritual. Then I think that is much more effective, rather than just like preaching or something, or telling people to read a certain thing, because it really helps them understand more what is meant by being a Christian. And if you're going to follow Jesus, who was, he was going out and doing things practically to help people understand. So I think that is a much better way of doing it.
Yeah. And I am stealing John Pauline's 9 proposals. We can start with that, and then maybe we'll talk more and go into other things also. But this is the book, Everlasting Gospel, Ever-Changing World. Maybe some of you have read it. But he put some proposals to the church, where, but it's not very specific. Again, it's more values than principles. And but I think every church has to sort of find the activity they want to do out of these principles. I can't give you a recipe. But following up on your comment, you know, this a very basic difference, and I think, don't think that's in John Pauline's points. Adventism is built on asking the question, what is true and what is right, and then interpreting the Bible and it have the right answer. Many people today don't care so much about that question, but they ask the question, is it important? Does it work? That means, what difference does it make? You know? But not whether it's true or not, that's not so important. For them, it is, does it work? Does it work in my life? And I think when you say about practical Christianity, you know, they can see that when I do these things, I am a spiritual person. It works. And there's a fundamental question in Adventism that don't speak to this time. And we can, you know, we can jump up and down and say, you have to discuss this with us because it's important for us. And we have to discuss whether or not it's, whether it's Sabbath or Sunday. And we can jump up and down as much as we like. But people say, I don't care. I don't care. And what do you intend to do about that? Just keep on saying it? No, we cannot do that. We have to approach life in a different way. Actually, we have to approach life more and doctrines less. But when people, once they have understood the Christian life, they might be interested to hear more doctrines from the Bible. But there might be different routes to the same end result. And for the people who are, you know, who lived back there when Adventism started, these were the central questions of their lives. So they took it there, and maybe that took them to spirituality and practical Christianity. But maybe practical Christianity can take some others into the whole package of the biblical truth, which is both teaching and practical Christianity. Let's go to the John Pauline's ideas. Here you have them. And we probably should comment on each of them. From public to relational evangelism. And that's really what I talked about before. It's not so much about the program, it's about the people. And that if we as Christians don't have friends who can see a genuine Christian life in our life, how can we tell anybody about anything? From short term to long term, what does he mean by that? Yes, he means that in the 1940s, most of our neighbors were Christians, and they knew the gospel, they knew the Ten Commandments, they had respect for God and the church, and they knew basic concepts about Jesus and his teachings. Whereas now some young people don't know whether Jesus lived before or after the First World War. And you know, it's not a joke, it happened, these questions are real. So the people have to learn so much more, and they have to go to through some personal changes and understanding in a longer term to actually understand what the Christian life is all about. So it's a different thing, and it's not only about teaching people X number of ideas, it's learning them to live a life. And again, we come back to life and practical issues. From our agenda to felt needs, what is that all about? That is what we just talked about. Our agenda is to teach people to think right. But they don't want to think right, they want to live right. And their questions are different from our answers. Often, if we think of us who we were traditionally. So, we have to start asking, where do they come from, and what are their needs? And then try to forget our own agenda, which we have in our backbone, really, is always there. From church-based to neighborhood or workplace-based evangelism, that means the church building might not be serving us right in evangelism, but to be mixing with people in the workplace and in the neighborhood is where people live and are and can listen. But for many people, churches are suspect from the very start. And actually, when you think of it, the church in Europe doesn't have a very pleasant history. Even if the Adventist church wasn't a part of all those sins, it is there, the Christian movement were a part of politics in Europe and distorted the whole image of Christ and used power to control people's lives. It's not a very nice history. So for many people, the church is suspect. From one way to multiplicity of approaches, we have talked about that already, and I have seen that work. You know, we have to do what we You know, the Holy Spirit guides us. Every local church is guided by the Holy Spirit. You don't need a union president to tell you what to do, because you know the people you know, and you know their needs. From conversion to process focus, and that is, you know, for the people, I'm trying to be brief on each point here. For the people who knew the basic Christian message, the idea of conversion, that means to repent from your sins and receive forgiveness from God and then sort of growing into a new person, that was a concept people knew, and they could walk into that experience when they gave their lives to Christ. I am not sure that, maybe I should speak more about it. If you want to ask questions about that, do that afterwards. I am not sure that sin, forgiveness, and that whole approach about how bad we are, you know, if that is really a fruitful way of approaching people today, even if it's a biblical concept. I can expand on that if you want me to, but I think people find their way into spirituality through, for example, the people I talked about earlier who learned to pray and learned that God is real and cares for them, and from that perspective of goodness, of the goodness of God, they grew into a relationship with Him. And the fact that they are sinners, most people know that, but to the way it was depicted by some evangelical movements, you know, I am not sure that that's a necessary way to. I leave it there. Ask me, because I can expand quite a bit on that. From church to community, and there again, it's not only about the building, but it is about the building. It's not, you know, we are not focusing around our own structures and our own membership and what we are, but we are focusing on what community is. From church control to God controlled, what Pauline is writing there is really, the church should be careful. You know, we have when we have the national church and the higher organizations, we should be careful not to control the local church, because the local church really can be led by God to do what is needed there, and we have to allow for a variety of activities and approaches. And from exclusive to inclusive is, and this is hard in practice, it's easy to say, but we have tended to say, you know, it's when you have accepted a certain number of ideas and a number of behaviors that you can belong here. But maybe we have to say that the people who belong here will eventually grow into these practices and understandings. And that is a difficult balance, and we can talk about that too, because there is quite a bit of discussion among Adventists. You know, when should people be baptized? How much should they accept and know before they can come into church fellowship? When can they become members and all that sort of thing? And he is suggesting that we need to be more inclusive in our approach to these things. That was an attempt to, I mean, that they are his answers, and I have said similar things in my presentations today, but I think they answer your question.
Particularly the second one, I did evangelism for about 25 years, and it was very traditional.
Yeah.
You ran maybe once a week for 9 months,
yeah,
and then had a baptism hopefully at the end of that time.
Yeah.
But then it also came in that we will have a shorter campaign of 4 to 5 weeks, 5 times a week.
Yeah.
And at the end of that time, you should get them.
Yeah.
And I feel that that is wrong.
Yeah.
And I know I helped an evangelist when I first came here in Dundee. And he said, if they're not baptized by the time I leave, they will not be. It was scorched earth policy.
Mm.
And I think that we have to realize that people come to Christ and to faith over a period of time.
Yes.
We can't always just say, all right, you can't afford it.
No.
And every night you will be there. I think we've got to realise it. And not give up.
No.
We've still got to work with people.
I think for most people who come into the church back in Scandinavia, something between 3 and 5 years is the normal thing. From the first contact with the church, because there's so much to learn. There's so many things to change, and there's so many things to really reflect upon. Is that me? Also? Can I be honest about that? Yeah?
I have a couple of questions. Do you think that, in a sense, having a physical church building and being committed to it takes too much of our energies because we have to run programs? And it can actually hold us back. Mm. And secondly, what do you think to the simple church concept?
The simple church concept? Okay, the first one first. Definitely yes. I don't think that the fact that we have built many church buildings have contributed to growth. Not where I live, in Scandinavia. Rather the opposite, I believe. But I'm not sure about that, because there are so many other factors that were changed in the 60s and 70s. And I mean, so, you know, we built all these churches in the 60s and 70s, but already, as I said, in Denmark in 62, there had been a change, and the growth of the church had stopped. And there might be the whole sexual revolution, the whole... value system of the church was challenged in the 50s and 60s. People turned their back on traditional authorities. That whole thing started back there in the 60s, and in Denmark it was very early in the 50s, and in America maybe a little bit later, and a very liberal country. So I think those are factors too. But you know, there has been done quite a bit of research on this thing about buildings, and it is happening in every denomination all over the world. Churches that are started growing fairly quickly to begin with, as soon as they come out of rented buildings and maybe school halls or whatever, and into their own properties, they tend to soon go into a plateau in their growth and just stay who they are. And there's so much energy is going into church. I mean, I don't know about your situation. I just speak, so let me just speak from again, the Danish context, but I think it's similar. I know churches that are so few have so few members that the church building takes up all of their income locally. They have no money to do anything for anybody else, because everything goes to heating the place and light, and then the basic expenses. And then they have to take care of it. Sometimes this was built in the 60s. That means it is 50 years old. They have to take care of this property. And you have a handful of people who maybe are not so young anymore. And all their energy goes to maintain the building and to perform Sabbath school and worship. Friends, we have lost it. The purpose of this movement is not to have church buildings and do Sabbath school and worship for our own members. Then we have lost our purpose, and we are just maintaining a man-made situation. And free yourself of it. Because, you know, the Spirit of God is not dependent on this building. It's nice to have it, you know, I'm not saying it's wrong to have it or anything like that. But if you come to the point where you don't have any resources to do anything for anybody else than yourself, then there's something fundamentally wrong with the whole situation. And get rid of it. And use the energy you have left to do something for somebody else and for the kingdom of God. Since I was in the position as union president, I travel to all the churches and talk to them all the time. And I see this frustration in people's lives. And I say, this is what I have said for the platform at the union session, so it's not something I say in secret. If a church cannot set aside a third of its money for somebody else than themselves, then there's something wrong with that church. Either they don't give enough, or they should give away something that they are spending their money on. Because if we are spending all our money on ourselves, how can we see that we are doing a ministry in this society? We can't. So we have to think a bit, be a bit tough with ourselves and say, what's really happening here? Are we doing what we should? And that goes for time. Some churches, small churches, they say, all we can manage to do is to have people do Sabbath school and teach Sabbath school, and then we have worship, and sometimes we have a guest pastor, or one of us have to preach, and then we have a pianist, and then we go home. That's all we manage, because it takes all our energy to do Sabbath school and worship. I say, don't do it. Because we are not called to have Sabbath school and worship every Sabbath. This is that we are a movement. So I say, skip Sabbath school and worship one Sabbath a month and go out in the community and do something for somebody else. Or twice. We cannot spend all our time and energy on ourselves. If we come to that point, we have failed. That's my answer to the first question. Then the other question is simple church. I read the book. Small groups. Yeah, I enjoyed the book. I haven't reflected all that much about it afterwards, I think. But what the simple church is saying is, don't spread your energy out, but try to coordinate the activity of the church to sort of go in the same direction. Am I with you now? Are we on the same line? Because he uses the illustration, for example, of one church that started their children's ministry, and then when that grew, they connected other things to that children's ministry, but it was sort of a focus for the whole church to go in one direction.
As far as I understand, simple church is like starting with a house group and bringing in friends and neighbours and doing church from home. On a very basic level, according to the needs of the people who come, and it's a very social based, because you also eat together, spend time together. And then when the group grows, then a group will split off and do the same where they live.
Okay.
So it's actually working within your local community, your workmates, your neighbours, your friends.
Okay, well, that I don't think is the book, The Simple Church, because I read a book that is called Simple Church. And it's a concept, I can't remember the author, but he actually talks about a church community and not cell groups in homes. But let's talk about what you were mentioning there. The church operated like that in the New Testament times, didn't it? Isn't that what we read? There were no church buildings. They met in the homes. They soon had church buildings, probably, and we know they did. But all human structures tend to try to organize themselves more and more. That's the way things are, I guess. But the church functioned perfectly fine like that. I don't know how then. If the Adventist church could survive as it is, if everything turned into house groups and networks rather than more sort of solid organization like we have. But that is not really the important question either. It's not the most important question. And I think, in light of this, and in light of how people function, I think Christian values and spirituality can be much better communicated in a small group with dialogue than one person standing up here talking to a lot of people here. I think there's a lot of good things in that, in the concept you're describing. Absolutely. Maybe A church will prosper more having house groups a couple of Sabbaths a month and then meet for worship a couple of Sabbaths a month than doing what we usually do. Actually, I read a really nice story. This was from far away. I think this is a long time since I read it. But a church in Australia, there were just a few people, and they said, we are spending all our energy just maintaining what we are doing. What can we do? So they decided to split up, and there were not so many, so they just split in two groups to meet in homes and then not meet in church for a whole year or even 18 months, and then just do sort of network evangelism and invite friends into house groups. And when they met again, they had doubled their number because they could actually take care of maintaining what they had sort of hindered them from actually meeting up with people and do a more personal ministry.
I'm going to claim the ownership of the microphone here and ask my question now. Two things. I would very much like to hear more about the conversion to process focus, but just put that to one side for the moment. You mentioned half an hour ago when you were talking about that lady, prayer warrior, you referred to her as.
Yeah.
And you said a very interesting statement, which is, I think, at the core of absolutely everything in our European culture. You first of all have to show that there is a God before you can then progress onto anything else. Does God exist? Does prayer work? Those were the two questions that really struck a chord with me.
Mm.
What is your answer to the "is there a God" question? What do you say in a high street in Copenhagen when someone asks you that question?
Yeah, and again, you know, it's not to argue it. It is to experience it. And that is the one of the differences between Adventism and the modern spirituality and the spirituality of our time. That we want to argue for it, but people want to experience it. People want to feel it. They want to see it happening.
So what would you do then? I'm going to pick away at this
one. You have to start praying with them.
With a view to...
Yeah, help them to pray and say, I will pray for you. And I will pray for you with you, and I will challenge you to pray for yourself. Pray. This is what this Susan did with these people. I have spoken to them, and she's, you know, one of them was one of her workmates. Another one was a person who came to her for therapy because she was going through a divorce, and she just started praying for them, and taught them what to say when they went home and pray in their own home and in their own lives. And they did not come to believe in prayer because she had 15 arguments for why that works, or because she had 10 arguments for why God exists. They started to believe in prayer and God because when they prayed, their lives were changed. And it was not like, you know, that their husband was healed from cancer or that suddenly they had £10,000 on a note that they hadn't expected or something. It was just they could sense that when they kept on praying for issues in their lives, there was somebody there helping them to sort it out.
So the answer to "is there a God" is "let me teach you to pray," which is a good answer.
I think, and maybe it's more. No, that was the prayer part of it, I think, but you. You have to draw people into an experience, and an experience of worship, which is close to prayer. But that's a strong emphasis in the Catholic Church to bring people into worship, and then help people to see. This is hard to put into words. Can I tell a little story? And it also it go a little bit on the conversion process thing. This is something that I experienced in Coventry 4 years ago, I think it is. I was touring to Coventry and Manchester to see new church plants, and it was an interdenominational thing, so it was not only in the Adventist church, it was all over the place. And we actually came to the cathedral in Coventry that had a church plant in the cathedral, and they had started an alternative service in the back of the church. I mean, the cathedral is huge. You have probably been there, many of you. And but the one of the priests in that Anglican church said something that I've been thinking about so many times since. She said, "When I started working here, I had the traditional evangelical approach to how you come to God. You have to realize that you are a sinner. Then when you feel condemned, you ask for forgiveness and you experience God's grace and he forgives your sins. And that is a conversion experience. You start to follow Christ and then you get eternal life." And she said, "I had experienced that people didn't connect to that at all. Most people didn't understand what I was talking about." So I gradually started to meet people differently. And she said, "I started to ask people what spiritual experience they had had in their lives." And she said, "You would be surprised. Almost everybody has a spiritual experience in their life of some sort. It might be really way out, but it is there. You know, most people," that was her words, maybe I don't know if she's right, but she said, "Most people have had experience where they said, I had this car accident, I should have been dead, but I am alive, it's a miracle. Or they have had a dream where they dream every night, but this particular dream was as if somebody said something to me and said something to my life. Some people have experience when they say, it must have been an angel." And then she went on like that and said, "Most people have some sort of impression of the supernatural in their life somehow. I don't know if that is entirely true." That was her point. So, but what is? I'm not finished. This now comes the important part to answer your question. And she said, "Rather than talking to them about this conversion thing, I try to connect the biblical teachings about God and spiritual life to their experiences. Sometimes I had to correct them and say, your interpretation of what happened there is maybe not the right, because I think you should see it in this light." But she built on what people already had experienced in their lives. And she said, "By doing that, I am not condemning them, and I am getting a yes and not a no from them, because you actually relate to their own life experience." And she said, "I can bring them from what they are today and to further on in their faith walk." I have thought about that a lot, because it both explains about conversion to process, but it also says something that people actually have experiences that they can relate to the argument or the understanding. Is there a God? Or is there something more in the universe? I don't know if it's the whole answer. But I have thought about that a lot, because I think there's some wisdom there. There might be some challenge in that as well. But there is something quite significant there.
That was my son who asked that question. Right. And I'm going to answer by, it's very simple. You said it this morning in your sermon. The man who found the pearl, the man who found the treasure, he went out and did something about it. Yes. You can only convince somebody else that there's a God if you present to them your own personal experience. That's the strongest advert in favor of being a Christian. Mm-hmm. What it's done for you, I've got it, don't you want it too? Going back to the other question about tiny churches and everything, all your money going into keeping up a building. Yes, I agree with you. That is stupid housekeeping. But also we've got to remember what the Bible says, forget not the gathering of yourselves together. Forsake not the gathering of yourselves together, because that strengthens each other. So we do have to meet together to encourage one another. That is one of the strongest things that keeps you as a Christian. Yes, I agree. If we split up, if we spend all our money on it, no. Think of a different practical, use that common sense and find an alternative place to meet. Also, the other thing was the congregational church doesn't hang together. I was a youngster, congregational church was a church, but it didn't hang together because it was fragmented. Each did their own thing, and if we do that, we will lose our common doctrines and our truth. We have to be aware of that. So we can't afford to splinter off. We need each other. There's no question about that. That's biblical. That's truth. It's Ellen White says it, the Bible says it, it's common sense, and we have to remember that, but we have to be sensible and not be stupid with buildings that we can't afford. I quite agree on that.
Yeah, and of course there's not only one aspect of this, and I'm glad that you mentioned what you do, because we need each other to grow spiritually. But of course, that can also happen in a small group. But I think small groups needs to meet the big group. Yeah. So I wouldn't go for only small groups and nothing else. I think it's good to meet many Christians and Adventists together. If you have surplus of energy and you can have a place like this, it's wonderful, and use it right, and you have the resources to do it, that's fine. It's only when it becomes the only thing you can do is to take care of yourself.
Yeah. You may have seen the chart at the back of the church when Steve particularly started our CAP program, which is Crusade, and we're not a wealthy church by any means. Not many with good incomes, as I would say, probably not even national average in some ways. And yet in the last 5, 6, 7 years have given £110,000 to project in Crieff, in Perth and around the world. I think we've been blessed because of that. And I think it has turned us away from ourselves to thinking of others. So we've had good experiences. But I grew up in a house group. And my dad, retired minister, went to Cornwall. There were only two other Adventists in the whole of the county. And so the church started in the front room of my auntie's house. All right, I went to church, and we did meet. But I also think we lacked a tremendous amount. We're very confined just to that one room. And so on the other hand, I would like to give thanks to God for, this is perhaps selfish, what this church has done for me. And I have a tremendous joy in coming to worship here. I see this as my family. I think also more and more of state fellowship meals where we've got to know each other and to share. And I think there is something special about worshiping God in a reverent and a happy way. So I think there is a place for church, although I'm getting too old perhaps to think of all the messy church and everything else. Maybe at my age that doesn't appeal. I like perhaps that sense of traditional, but I think in evangelism we have to look for different ways. I do believe that the old campaign style is not working in our age, and we can't just repeat something that doesn't work. So no. I do believe that what you're saying, we've got to look much more. But from my angle, I suppose I thank God that we have a place that we worship.
Yeah. Fair enough. I am not against it. I'm just saying the day when the day comes that it steals away our possibility to do the mission.
Can I just ask, you gave a quote there that if a church isn't putting aside 30%,
That is taken out of the air. Okay. I mean, that's up to you to say what that should be, but it's not a biblical or a policy.
Okay, no, I just wondered if that came out of research or anything.
That's what I said to the churches, really, that I think we should have, you have to decide in your own church boards what you think, but you have to set aside something to do something for other people than yourself.
Because when you said that, I was doing the mental maths with our church budget, and we are at about just over a third. Because I like to think of us as being generous, but when you express it in the other way around, that we're keeping two-thirds of the money for ourselves, I'm not so sure about that. I shall have to dwell on that.
Okay. Should we have a break, or should we stop, or what should we do now? Some of you are starting to look a bit tired, actually. We have been going for 1.5 hours in one straight. Pardon?
Put the kettle on.
Yeah. at least we should have a break, but I don't know how...